one gulp. Chapter 23. Berg pushed the double doors open, and together they walked into the suite.
Wow,
Charlie sighed. I didn't even have to duck, he noted, looking up to see that he still had headspace beneath the doorframe.
It's like how I imagine heaven.
Steps led down into the living room.
I want to live here forever.
Charlie did a little spin around.
Look at this place.
Berg closed the doors.
Does this mean I need to be nice to the weasel?
Absolutely not. She grinned before diving onto the couch. Look at the size of this couch. She ran from one end to the other. It's as big as Nebraska.
It's bear-sized, so a polar can sleep on it comfortably.
Or an elephant. With a laugh, she flopped onto the cushions. Fabulous! Berg came around the couch and dropped down next to her.
Look, a basket.
For us? Or do we have to pay for that shit like with a minibar? Not knowing the answer, Berg reached over and grabbed the greeting card from the basket.
I'm guessing you'll need this,
he read out loud. He took hold of the handle and moved the basket to the coffee table in front of them. The plastic wrap was a dark red, so he couldn't see through it. He opened it and snorted.
Love basket, he announced.
Ah, she said, rolling her eyes. He is such an asshole. Berg took a closer look before relaxing back into the couch.
Condoms, oils, a couple of vibrators.
He shook his head.
Subtle.
The reason my sister likes Dutch so much is because he's as subtle as she is. Now, right next to him, Charlie rested her head against his arm. He could see the exhaustion on her face, knew she'd had a long day and probably just wanted to go to bed. Alone. Without some big guy trying to sidle his way up to her so he could get laid, no matter what she might have said in the restaurant. He pulled his arm out so he could put it around her shoulders and pull her in close.
Get some sleep.
Her body relaxed, her head now against his chest.
Okay.
After a few minutes, Berg thought Charlie was asleep until he heard her take in a deep breath.
This new allergy med Stevie turned me on to was rocking my world.
Berg had to laugh. He'd never heard anyone talk about medications the way the McKilligan sisters did.
I can smell everything. It's like a new world has opened up to me.
Now you can tell the difference between bears, I hope.
Especially since you guys take it all so personally. Charlie continued to sniff, and Berg smiled, closing his eyes when he realized he was as tired as she was. That was until she suddenly turned her head into his body and began sniffing him. She felt Berg jerk under her nose.
What are you doing?
You smell awesome, but...
She took several more sniffs.
No cologne?
I don't wear cologne. It bothers most of us. Shifters, I mean.
Charlie turned her body and took more sniffs, letting her nose lead her up to his neck, taking in Berg's scent. When she pulled away, about to say again how awesome he smelled, she found his gaze locked on her face, jaw tight, brow pulled low. It should have frightened her, that particular expression. But nope. Charlie leaned in, keeping her eyes locked on his, not wanting to lose the contact, not wanting to lose him. As she had earlier that morning.
Christ, had that only been this morning?
Charlie pressed her lips against Berg's. She really wasn't tired anymore. The thought of going to sleep now.
Nope.
She didn't want to do that. She continued to kiss him, his body rigid beneath her. Maybe he'd suggested getting some sleep because once he was alone with her, he wasn't really interested. Didn't really want to be bothered with a crazy female and her even crazier sisters and the psychotic family they belonged to, despite the fact the family wanted nothing to do with Charlie and her siblings. What sane male wanted to be part of all that? Realizing she'd made a mistake, Charlie started to pull away, but he must have felt it. Must have felt her retreat, because his big hands suddenly framed her face and he kissed her back. Hard and wonderfully overwhelming. His tongue slid into her mouth, tangled with hers, while he pulled her onto his lap. All sleepiness and doubt wiped from her mind, Charlie could only think about getting Berg Dunn's clothes off. She went for his T-shirt first, gripping the fabric with her hands and lifting, revealing abs and a chest that Charlie had assumed she'd only find in comic book hero movies. Berg pulled back and lifted his arm so she could remove his shirt, then quickly returned, kissing her again, like he was trying to crawl inside her, become one with her. She should have been freaked out by his intensity. When guys she'd dated in the past, full humans, attempted to come onto her like this, she couldn't get away fast enough. They'd made her uncomfortable, made her envision hard breakups that involved stalking. But not Berg. She didn't get that vibe with him. So she let him overwhelm her. She let him grab her tight around the waist and pull her even closer, his lips never leaving hers. His hands moved over her skin, fingertips sliding over scars and bumps, and he didn't seem to care. Scars weren't ugly to him, just reminders of what it meant to be the daughter of Freddie McKilligan. She didn't even know when he got her shirt off, or her bra. She just knew her top half was naked and his mouth was on her breasts, sucking her nipples, his hands enjoying the weight before moving to her back, her waist. Charlie gasped, his mouth on her nipples felt different. Weird. Not bad, though. Not bad at all. More like outstanding. Yes, outstanding. Like he had two mouths on one nipple. Yeah, that was definitely weird. Weird she'd even thought of that. But before she could figure out what was happening, he had her on her back, her jeans and panties down around her ankles. She thought he'd take care of her jeans completely, but he didn't. He just lifted her legs, her knees bent, and pushed them practically over her head. It was like the jeans were ropes, keeping her legs trapped. Just the thought had her wet. Then his face disappeared and his mouth was on her pussy. Charlie gasped. She felt it again, like there were two mouths on her rather than just the one. She didn't get it, didn't understand it, but couldn't really even think about it too much. Not when he began to eat her out. His tongue was sliding inside her like he wanted to devour her, lips playing with her clit, twisting it this way and that, owning it, ruling it. Reaching above her head, Charlie grasped the arm of the couch and held on for dear life. Twisting from one side to the other, it seemed like her body wanted to get away, that what it was feeling was just too intense. But no, she didn't want to get away. She wanted to stay here as long as she could, letting Berg Dunn twist her around his big fingers like the finest bread dough. Her grip on the couch tightened. Her legs trembled. She heard roaring and realized it was in her ears, like a tsunami crashing down on her. Her back arched off the couch, but Berg, thank God, held on, kept her grounded to this moment as he made her come once, then again. One orgasm right after the other, and she couldn't stop it. Not that she wanted to, but it didn't matter. She cried out at some point, but she didn't know when. She just knew that she was coming all over Berg's face, and he didn't seem to care. He just kept licking and playing and holding her pinned to that giant couch that she wanted to take with her wherever she might move in the next 10,000 years. When the second orgasm finally left her body, she realized she had Berg trapped between her thighs, unwilling to let him go. She forced herself to release the man, panting harshly as she turned on her side. Charlie gave herself a moment to calm down. She didn't want to say anything stupid, do anything stupid that could ruin what had just happened. But she made the foolish mistake of looking up at the bear sitting beside her. His arms were stretched out across the back of the couch, his gaze focused straight ahead. Then his tongue lashed out and licked her juices from his face. It was like he was licking the remnants of that honey bun they'd had earlier. Like he'd never tasted anything better. And he was tasting her. She shoved her jeans, panties, and sneakers off, then launched herself at the bear, shoving him down on the couch. His eyes widened in shock.
"What's happening?"
he demanded. "Shut up," she ordered. She unzipped his jeans and yanked them down far enough to get his cock out. She grabbed a condom from Dutch's stupid, but helpful, love basket. She had the condom on him, and that's when he decided to start talking.
"Charlie."
She covered his face with her hand before grabbing his cock with the other and holding it steady so she could drop her pussy on it. She did, and... holy shit. Holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit! All his best intentions out the window. He'd planned to do the whole taking his time, getting her to another orgasm thing. He'd planned on a good half hour for their first time. But then she'd attacked him. She'd come after him like a cheetah after a gazelle in one of those Animal Planet documentaries. And God, he'd liked it. Loved it. Knowing she wanted him as much as he wanted her. The problem now was that the bear in him wanted her, not the man. The bear wanted her, and Berg wasn't sure he could do much about it. He decided to risk it, to take a chance that Charlie McKilligan was really up for this ride. He gripped her hips and in one move rolled them over, while keeping his cock inside her, putting her in the same position he'd had her when he'd given her head. She gasped in surprise, but she didn't try to push him off. She didn't seem pissed, just curious. He bent her knees and pushed her legs back so that when he leaned in, her ankles rested on his shoulders. Placing his arms on either side of her, he loomed over her, and again, she didn't seem to mind. He moved his hips a bit, this way, that, until he heard her make a sound that was distinct. And he felt it, the way her pussy clenched hard. Knowing he'd hit the right spot, he plowed into her, not taking his time, not really thinking about much besides how good she felt. He just fucked her, hard. But he'd been smart, like most bears, found the right spot so that, as he fucked her, his cock kept hitting it, kept slamming into it. Now her entire body clenched around him. Her hands reached up and grabbed hold of the couch arm again. He was grateful, too, because her claws came out, ripping into the leather rather than his flesh. Her eyes were open wide, and she stared right through him, her breath shortening, her body beginning to shake, and he just kept going. The grizzly had taken over, claiming what was his, making Charlie his, at least as far as the bear was concerned. She began to curse, the same phrase over and over, "Oh, shit! Oh, shit! Oh, shit!" until it was one long word, "Oh, shit, oh, 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 shit." Charlie exploded around him, her curses becoming a silent shout, her sweat mingling with Berg's, the couch arm devastated by those claws. And he came right behind her, unable to stop himself once he'd looked down into that beautiful face and saw such pleasure, such happiness at what he was doing to her, oblivious to what she was doing to him. When the last spasm rolled through him, he collapsed on top of her, unable to move for at least 2 minutes. Then he was afraid he would crush her, so he moved them both onto their sides, staring at each other, panting, sweating, smiling. "This doesn't have to mean anything," she finally said, not hurting his feelings because he could hear the teasing in her voice.
"Oh, yeah?"
"Yeah. It could just be the haze of first-time sex. I bet if we try again, we'll find out it was a fluke." To Berg's amazement, even before he registered what she was really saying to him, his cock understood. It twitched, still inside her, still wearing the condom.
"We should definitely try again."
He was still panting, but his body didn't care. He reached over her to the basket, grabbed another condom.
"You know, to be sure."
Chapter 24. With her head buried in the mattress, blocking the scream she couldn't stop, the orgasm shot through Charlie's body. She couldn't really move, though. Berg had his hand on her back, keeping her pinned to the mattress, her
her ass in the air so he could fuck her from behind, his free hand teasing her clit, managing to get yet another orgasm out of her. She felt him stiffen above her, and then he was coming, roaring. The goddamn windows shook a bit. When he was wrung dry, he collapsed next to her, but he didn't relax until he'd pulled her into his body, holding her against his chest.
"Okay," she admitted. "Maybe it's more than just a first-time sex haze."
"Yeah," he said, chuckling. "Maybe."
No longer wearing her watch, because all her clothes were in the other room, Charlie asked,
"What time is it?"
"No idea."
He blindly grabbed a remote control by the bed and hit a button. The dark drapes flew back, and they both screamed at the bright morning sun flooding their room. "Close it!" she yelled at him. "Close it!" The drapes quickly closed, and they again collapsed onto the mattress. "We've been fucking all night," she admitted out loud.
"Yes, we have been fucking all night."
"Awesome," she sighed, enjoying Berg's laugh as he hugged her tight. They ordered breakfast from room service, and nothing was more enjoyable than watching Charlie's reaction to the amount of waffles, bacon, and honey that was brought. "Who is going to eat all this?" she demanded, staring at the platters of food. Like Berg, she wore one of the hotel terry cloth robes, but this was a bear suite, so it was a robe for someone Brita's size, and Charlie was swimming in it. The back dragged behind her like some medieval train, and she looked like a queen to Berg. "Is your brother coming?" she asked, while Berg walked around the large table on the terrace.
"He is not coming. And stop making me feel bad about how much food I eat. I'm a bear. I have an appetite."
"Uh-huh," she said, eyeing him when he ended up behind her and pulled out her chair. She jumped a bit. "What are you doing?"
"Being a gentleman. Enjoy it. This won't last."
She laughed. "That's probably a good thing. I'm not used to gentlemen." Berg sat down in the chair next to her, but leaned over to kiss her before she started to eat. She kissed him back, her mouth smiling against his, the palms of her hands pressed against the sides of his neck. When he pulled back, his gaze focused on her lips, she pointed at him. "My stomach is growling. We're eating." He grinned. Knowing she still wanted him, even after their long night, meant he could wait to get her back to bed. They ate and talked, enjoying being on the terrace without anyone attempting to kill Charlie at that very moment. It was windy, but the walls on either side that separated them from the other terraces cut down on that problem considerably.
"Tell me about your mom," he said after a little time.
"My mom?"
"You talk about your father all the time. What about your mom?"
"She was amazing. And I'm not saying that simply because I lost her early." Her smile was so warm, so loving, that Berg felt it in his chest. She was the hardcore artist type, although she had no artistic skill whatsoever. She called herself a muse. She was there to inspire others to feats of greatness, she said, while stretching her arms in the air. And Berg had the feeling that was a move her mother used to make. Stevie's mom, although I never forgave her for just deserting her child, knew that there was no one better for Stevie than my mom. She knew how to get brilliance out of people without pressuring, without pushing. You never want to push Stevie.
"How long has Stevie been?"
He searched for the least insulting word. "Nervous, high-strung, and panicky?" He shrugged.
"Okay."
"Always. When you have an IQ as high as possibly anyone, ever, it's hard not to also be kind of a mess. We're lucky she only has a panic disorder. She could have just as easily turned into the Unabomber." Charlie lowered her voice, and that nearly happened. "But we managed it."
"And Max?"
She went back to her normal voice. "Max was the first to move in with us. Her mother called mine, asked her to babysit while she took on a job. Turned out the job was a jewelry heist that my father arranged. When things went bad, he ran, leaving her and the others behind. After that, Max just never left us." "And what about your mother?" she asked, bringing the mug of coffee to her lips.
"My mother smokes pot."
He
He wasn't really surprised when her sip of coffee spewed across the table. "Pardon?" Charlie asked, unable to stop her giggling.
"My mother has, as long as I've known her, been an aficionado of the leaf."
"Seriously?"
"Yeah. She's a very laid-back bear. Of course, now she's got the business."
"The business?"
"She used to make THC-infused honey for her and her friends, but now she makes it for anyone willing to pay for it. Her business is getting huge, much to my sister's shame."
"Britta's not a fan?"
"My mother has always embarrassed her. She'd come to parent-teacher conferences in her tie-dye dresses with Bob Marley silk-screened on the front. She never smoked, though, when she was pregnant with us, which I appreciate."
"I thought she bred dogs."
"She did that, you know, legally."
"I am loving this story."
"You're making fun of me."
"No, not at all. My mother wasn't exactly a saint, you know. She was just awesome. And that sounds like your mom, too. I love awesome moms." "And your dad?"
"Just a regular grizzly. If he could hibernate part of his life away in a cave, he would. Instead, he just sleeps in his recliner, watches a lot of TV, and manages the hives my mother uses for her honey business. They're a good couple. At some point, I'm assuming you'll meet her."
She swallowed her bacon, noticing that Berg was staring at her. "Am I supposed to be freaked out because you mentioned meeting your parents?" Charlie asked, snorting when he gave a small, adorably embarrassed shrug. "I guess you forgot I'm half wolf, and we attach. I just spent all night fucking you. I wasn't planning on going anywhere anytime soon. And since you seem to have poor decision-making skills when it comes to choosing a woman, I'm going to assume that's not a problem for you."
"It's not,"
he said quickly, smiling. "This doesn't mean we're married," she felt the need to amend. "It just means I'm not a one-night-stand kind of girl. We just do what normal people do." Berg looked off, thinking, and she knew he was trying to figure out what normal people do. "Date, dumbass," she explained. "Get to know each other better. Keep having sex."
"Oh."
His smile returned.
"Yeah, I can do that."
Charlie grabbed another strip of bacon and sighed out, "Bears." Berg was having such a good time hanging out with Charlie, alone for once, that he was definitely annoyed when he heard a doorbell. Frowning, they both stared at each other. "Was that a doorbell?" Charlie finally asked.
"Yeah."
"This room has a doorbell? Like a house?"
"Apparently."
He pushed back from the table, went inside and across the room. He pulled open the door and blinked in surprise.
"Hi, Hannah."
Hannah Jameson was a bear hybrid and a close friend of Britta's. They'd played in the hockey minors together a few years back. Hannah went on to become Hannah the Destroyer of Worlds Jameson on the Carnivores team, a power forward that his bear friends who loved hockey worshipped. She was a high scorer, or whatever, and almost every time she was on the ice, she had two grinder foxes who protected her, the Gallo twins. At least one of his younger cousins had a poster of the three women on his bedroom ceiling. They were in full hockey gear except for their helmets and looked absolutely terrifying, but the kid loved them. But Hannah also did investigative work for the group. They'd rescued her years ago from a pit-fighting operation somewhere up north and had paid for her room and board and education. She never did the wet work, as guys in the Marines used to call that sort of thing. At the same time, Hannah wasn't above taking on a challenge, especially when she and Britta went to a bar and received less than respectful come-ons from drunk, full humans who thought it would be funny to get a ride on the big girl. At 6'3", Hannah never took that particular insult very well. Neither did Britta. They'd bonded early on from their barroom brawls, and the group had always been nice enough to use its connections in the NYPD to get both out of jail in a timely manner, and without any black marks on their records. Still, he had no idea why Hannah was here now.
"Hi, Dad.
He frowned, and she quickly changed it to, Berg.
"Da, Berg. Really?
I knew it was one of you."
He liked Hannah, so he wouldn't hold it against her that after all these years she still couldn't tell him and Dag apart. Britta said she couldn't tell the Gallo twin foxes apart either. She just called each of them twin and pointed.
"So what's up?"
he asked.
"Is there a Charlie here?"
"Yeah, why?"
"I found out some information about her recent problems. I usually just hand my research off to the agent in charge of the case, but I was told that would not happen because apparently she kicked that agent's ass."
She smirked.
"Brava, by the way."
Laughing, Berg stepped back.
"Come on in."
Charlie stared at the remains of the bacon. The hotel had provided a platter full of two kinds of bacon, crispy and chewy, each in its own separate pile. Berg liked crispy, and Charlie had dug into the chewy. Perfect. The problem was that when it came to bacon, Charlie didn't have an off switch like she did when she ate almost anything else. If there was a pound of bacon in front of her, she would eat that entire pound without even blinking an eye. So she only allowed herself to get bacon on holidays like Christmas or Thanksgiving morning. She was afraid if she ate it every day, her heart would explode from all the grease. At the moment, there was a lot of bacon left, and Charlie didn't want to finish it. Well, she did want to finish it, but she knew she shouldn't. Cholesterol could still be an issue with shifters. They weren't immune. But her resistance was fading. Sitting on the terrace of a luxury hotel with the hottest and nicest guy she'd ever been with, wearing a fancy hotel robe and feeling immensely relaxed from all that great sex, it seemed a perfect day for more bacon. Her hand was over the platter when she heard Berg say,
"Charlie, this is Hannah."
Charlie snatched her hand back and looked toward the open glass doors. Berg stood beside a tall, powerfully built, dark-haired woman with dark brown eyes and a pretty face. But there were scars on her neck and her bare arms. A lot of scars. Scars on top of scars.
"And Hannah, this is Charlie."
Hannah stepped closer and held her hand out. Charlie shook it and gestured to the table. "Hungry? We have a ton of food left."
"I haven't finished eating yet,"
Berg said, sitting down.
"And you have to finish your bacon."
"I'm fine,"
Hannah said, pulling out one of the other chairs and sitting down.
"Rick Van Holt sent me over. I did research on the people who've been trying to take your sister Stevie, plus the, stolen $100 million from your Uncle Will."
"Yes. Did you find out anything?" Charlie sighed. "It's a Peruvian drug lord again, isn't it? My father and his Peruvian drug lords."
"Actually, no."
She opened her backpack. There was a laptop in there, but that wasn't what Hannah pulled out. Instead, she dug around until she grabbed a magazine. She placed it next to Charlie's plate. "Vanity Fair?" Charlie asked. "You found the ones trying to kill me in Vanity Fair magazine?"
"I did. The pages are marked."
There was a pink post-it in the middle of the magazine, and Charlie quickly flipped to that page. Berg got up and crouched next to her. Spread across the first two pages was a pictorial feature on what Charlie had to call the hottest women she'd ever seen. Dark-haired Italian beauties wearing gold bikinis that looked stunning against their golden brown skin, thin gold belly chains around their tight abs. On their feet they had Louboutins, and on their wrists and necks they had diamonds. Lots of diamonds. Still, despite their obvious wealth, the whole thing looked a little lowbrow for Vanity Fair, until Charlie read out loud, "The Twin Italian Invasion of Silicon Valley." She shrugged and looked at Hannah. "Who are they?"
"Katerina and Celestina Wera, CEOs of a major software company out of the Lombardo region of Italy. Their mother was an aristocrat of Italian and Greek birth. Very wealthy. Very independent. And she needed that independence because she was disowned by her family when she had the twins."
"That's harsh."
"Well, she met a much older man. She was in her late 20s and he was in his late 60s.
You.
But she ignored her parents' concerns over the relationship.
What she didn't know, unfortunately, was that her much older lover was still married and that she was not the only mistress. When she found out, she didn't take it well. I think there were some rage issues. Anyway, her parents cut her off. Her lover wouldn't help and cut off all contact. She was on her own with twin girls. But she was smart, vicious, and not afraid to get her hands bloody. She built a successful business and trained her daughters to take over, which they did when she got sick and died about a decade ago. From what I understand, the twins blamed their biological father's absence for their mother's death, and they blamed the father's family for his absence.
That's surprisingly fascinating, Charlie said, but I still don't know what this has to do with me and my sisters.
Well, she cleared her throat. Their father is Colin McKilligan. I believe your grandfather, which would make Katerina and Celestina your, aunts.
Charlie gazed at the woman called Hannah, then back at the magazine, where the women's matching smiles almost seemed to mock her. Unable to look any more, she tossed the magazine onto the table and pushed her chair back, standing. She walked around the table and over to the railing. She stood there, her hands on the black metal, staring out over the city. After a full minute of silence, Charlie suddenly screamed, "I hate my family!" Sitting outside on the front porch, enjoying her breakfast of a couple of bananas, Max abruptly looked away from her morning paper and over the Queen's Street outside their rental home. She glanced at Stevie sitting in the swing with the Dunn's dog, his giant head resting in her lap. The sisters locked eyes, and Max began to ask, "Did we just hear?" Her question died away, and they gazed at each other for a long moment before they said simultaneously, "Nah." Berg cringed as Charlie's scream echoed out over the city, and he watched her begin to pace. "What is wrong with these people?" Charlie demanded of the air. "If I looked back into the McKilligan lineage, would I only find assholes and scumbags? Are there any other kinds of McKilligans? Am I a scumbag or asshole?" "Of course not. Don't lie to me, Berg."
"I'm not lying. You can't be responsible for your asshole father, uncles, and grandfather.
And aunts. I have asshole aunts, too."
"There is something else," Hannah said.
Charlie threw up her hands.
"Oh, come on!"
"What is it, Hannah?" Berg pushed, hoping to get Charlie to focus and prevent Hannah from making a desperate run for it. "From what I can tell, I don't think the twins know that shifters exist. I don't think they know they're not completely human."
Charlie stopped pacing, stared at the hybrid.
"Is that even possible?"
"It's rare," Berg replied, "but it's been known to happen."
"How did they get through puberty and not know?" Charlie pushed. "Even though I can't shift, puberty was still hell on wheels."
Surprised, Berg asked,
"You can't shift?"
"Nope. My father's fucked up genes win again. I can just unleash claws and fangs, and it's really hard to kill me, which definitely is a plus."
"But think about it," Hannah said,
pulling out her laptop and moving plates and platters so she could lay it on the table.
"Instead of reveling in the success of their lives, they're busy trying to fuck over the people who they feel destroyed their mother. It's all that..."
"Honey badger rage?" Charlie asked.
"Without shifting, without even knowing what they are, they have no place for all that rage to go."
Hannah began tapping away at the laptop keys. "So what if they find out what they are? What if they learn to shift?"
Berg shook his head. "Being a shifter is kind of like being a hardcore drinker. It doesn't make you an asshole. It just enhances the asshole already within. These two females are not going to become lovely young ladies because they can let their honey badger out. I mean, do you think Max would be deep in her soul any different if she weren't a..."
"Okay, okay," Charlie cut in. "I get your point." Hannah turned the laptop around. Charlie smirked.
"You hacked into their private pictures?"
"Yeah. I'd strongly suggest you not look at the videos."
Hannah scrunched up her face, gave a short shake of her head.
Trust me.
Oh, look, they hunt big game in Africa with rifles and crossbows. Nothing like standing over a dead elephant to make you feel one with nature. She flicked through a few more pics, but then she ended up seeing her aunts naked. Berg heard her squeak and watched her click away from those images as fast as her fingers would let her. The real problem was when Charlie started to go through the twins' email. Charlie seemed to be a speed reader, zipping through the information quickly until she abruptly stopped and shoved her chair back again. She stood and stalked off, back into the hotel suite. Shocked, Berg leaned in to read the email that had upset Charlie. He saw the problem immediately. His head dropped, and he said to Hannah, "Charlie's father has been talking to the twins."
"From what I can tell," Hannah admitted, "he stole his brother's money at their urging, and then the twins stole it from him. Not because they needed to, but more a why-the-fuck-not kind of thing. I'm guessing they think it's funny."
"And I'm guessing Charlie's father walked right into that shit."
Chapter 25. Berg had barely stopped the truck before Charlie was out of it and crossing the street to her rental house. She opened her front gate and stepped through, and Berg's dog ran around the side of the house to greet her. She petted him, but kept moving. She walked into the house with the dog right behind her. She closed the door, but had only taken a few steps when she heard a knock on it. She went back and found Berg standing there, appearing a bit disgruntled. "What are you doing?" she demanded, in no mood. "Get in here."
"You closed the door in my face."
She headed toward the kitchen. "Not on purpose."
"That does not make me feel better, especially when you made sure the dog got in."
Her sister sat at the kitchen table. Max had her feet up, a magazine in her lap. Stevie was bent over a notebook, writing, her hand moving fast over the paper. She had a laptop open next to her work, but when she got really excited, she loved writing by hand. Dutch was also there, his arms on the table, crossed, his head resting on his arms. He appeared to be sleeping. He could sleep anywhere, during anything, according to Max. Not knowing how to start the conversation, Charlie tossed the Vanity Fair magazine in the middle of the table. Max was the only one who reacted. She grabbed the magazine and quickly found the post-it marked page. She held up the picture of the twin billionaires.
"You want me to start dressing like this?"
"Yes, including the gold belly chain." She chuckled and studied the picture.
"Who are they?"
she finally asked. Berg rested against the doorframe, arms crossed. He watched her, but didn't say anything, which she appreciated. This was family business, and one night of sex did not automatically make him family. "Those billionaire twins are, apparently, our aunts." Max frowned, confused. Stevie's head snapped up, eyes wide, and even Dutch stirred from his slumber, yawning and staring at the picture. He nodded.
"Your aunts are hot."
"And have been trying to kill us." Charlie went through the story quickly, everything she'd learned from Hannah. As she spoke, she could feel her anger growing. Her father. Her idiot father. True, he wasn't responsible for the angry twins, but he'd colluded with them. He'd gone against his own family for them, and he probably had no idea who they were. No idea whatsoever that the Wera twins were actually his half-sisters, that they were only using him to get even with a family they hated for their own reasons. Once again, his stupidity had put her in a situation where she had to do something she really didn't want to do. When she was finished, she waited for her sisters to react, to tell her what they thought, what they might want to do. Stevie dropped back in her chair and said simply, "Those bitches." But Max jumped up and came around the table to stand next to Charlie. She placed a magazine on the table and then proceeded to pose? Yes, pose like the twins. It was ridiculous.
"Dude," Dutch shook his head, "no. Just no."
What? We can be as sexy as these two.
No, Dutch said sadly. No, you really can't.
He reached across the table and grabbed the magazine.
How do you pronounce their last name?
He asked Charlie.
Do I look Italian to you?
Vera, Stevie said, going back to her notebook. Charlie noticed it wasn't one of the college-ruled or graph-paper notebooks she usually worked in, but a music notebook. Charlie couldn't remember the last time she'd seen her sister do anything related to writing music. It had been absolute years.
Where a what? Dutch asked.
Stevie lifted just her eyes to Dutch.
Where a. That's how you pronounce it.
He pointed at the magazine.
But there's a G.
Fed up, Stevie snatched the magazine from him and threw it across the room.
Don't annoy me.
Charlie realized that Max was still standing beside her, still posing. Her sisters weren't going to let their father fuck up their day yet again. Only Charlie ever did that. But not today. Not after her great night.
We should get to work, she announced. On my modeling career?
Max asked, still posing. Stalking our cousin, the bride. She shoved Max, who flew toward Berg. He stepped aside, and Max continued through the doorway.
Not cool!
Actually, Charlie thought it was very cool. Her new boyfriend could handle being around her family. For a McKilligan girl, that was a win. Britta disconnected the call just as Berg walked into the house.
There's a job in California for a couple of days, she said as he searched the side tables. If you're interested.
I'm not. Where are your car keys?
Which car?
The SUV. And why do you have keys in multiple places?
It's in my bag, and I'm not having this argument with you yet again.
He picked up her small black backpack, quickly located the SUV keys, and was gone. She was about to yell at Dag, still asleep upstairs, to see if he wanted to go to California for a few days, when Berg came back in the house and dropped into a chair across from the couch she was sitting on. He was smiling and seemed satisfied.
I thought you were going out, she said.
I never said I was going out.
Then why did you need my car?
Charlie and her sisters needed a car to go into the city.
Britta sat up, pointing a finger at her brother.
You gave those lunatics my car?
I need my car.
He thought a moment, then added,
And they're not lunatics. They're...
They're what?
Honey badgers.
Mostly. Britta was moments from yelling at her brother, but she heard someone come creeping down the stairs. The cat shifter her brother had picked up the night before was wearing the clothes she'd been wearing when Britta saw her coming into their house with Dag. She silently watched the puma walk by, heading toward the door. The twat smiled at Berg, but didn't even acknowledge Britta, and it was her house, too. So Britta did what any sister would do.
I really wish you'd stop bringing your whores here, Dag, she yelled at the cat's back.
The cat stopped at the living room doorway, back muscles flexing. But after a few seconds, she headed out. The front door slammed shut. Grinning, she looked at Berg.
What?
She asked when he shook his head at her.
Do not do that when Charlie spends the night.
I wouldn't do that to Charlie, she admitted, because Charlie would rip my face off. Because she's a lunatic. Which is why I can't believe you gave her my car.
Lent. I lent her your car. She'll bring it back.
Covered in bullet holes?
Her brother shrugged.
There's every possibility.
They drove the Dunn's SUV into the city and parked in the structure across the street from the Kingston Arms. You find Carrie and keep an eye on her. I want to know exactly what she's up to. Max nodded.
Okay. Dutch will be meeting up with us later.
Why?
Honestly? I think he's having fun.
I know I am, Stevie suddenly piped in, her grin wide. I feel like a spy. Whatever, Charlie motioned at her sisters. Stay on Carrie. I'll talk to Bernice. She sighed.
I guess she needs to know about her crazy half-sisters, too.
What makes you think she doesn't know already?
Max asked, so casually that Charlie began to worry.
Okay, forget I said that. Forget I said anything.
Max sounded so concerned that Charlie asked,
What are you talking about?
She ran her fingers over Charlie's forehead.
You've got the I'm freaking out frown lines.
Did you take your meds today? Stevie abruptly asked Charlie. I've got some Xanax in my bag.
Why do you have...
Charlie took a step back, mentally and physically.
Nope. I'm not doing this.
Do what I tell you to do, and I'll deal with Bernice. Okay?
Great.
Charlie walked away, but Max's voice followed after her.
For someone who just got laid...
Charlie turned fast, her arm raised, her fingers pointing like a gun. It felt good to see Max dodge behind the closest car, a move Charlie had trained her to do right after their mother had died. But she was worried that Stevie just stood there, staring, until Max grabbed her arm and yanked her behind the car, too.
Hopeless,
Charlie yelled, heading off again. So very fucking hopeless.
We love you, too,
Max yelled back. Max was shocked to see their cousin up before noon. Even with her wedding day fast approaching, they never thought Carrie would drag her ass out of bed and face the day. Not when she had her mother and bridesmaids handling most of the bullshit duties. But there she was, clearly sneaking out of her hotel room. Knowing her cousins, Max assumed the others had gotten high on the hotel offerings of snake poison-infused vodka and promptly passed out in a big pile of honey badger females, allowing Carrie to sneak away simply by stepping over her passed-out relatives. Carrie eased the door closed and took a quick look around before running toward the elevators. Max stepped back and pressed herself against the wall before her cousin passed the hallway she was hiding in with Stevie. Once their cousin passed and they heard the ding of the elevator, they went after her, catching the next elevator. Max assumed that her cousin was going to the first floor. The fiancé was somewhere in the hotel with all his dude bro groomsmen, but Max doubted that's where Carrie was headed. She stepped out of the elevator and went up on her toes, trying to see over the crowd of people in the perpetually busy hotel.
There,
Stevie said, pointing. They ran after their cousin, catching sight of her as she hurried outside and caught a cab. Max stepped off the curb and raised her hand to hail her own cab. Stevie laughed behind her.
This is so cool! We're in hot pursuit!
A cab stopped, and Max pulled the door open with one hand and shoved her sister inside with the other.
Dork,
she muttered before ordering the driver to follow that cab! A statement that got almost hysterical laughter from her ridiculous baby sister. Chapter 26 Charlie tracked down her aunt in the hotel bar, sitting with eldest daughter Kinsey. Charlie had to stop and look at her watch to make sure she'd read the time correctly. It didn't seem as though her aunt was a raging alcoholic, but maybe the pressure of a wedding her daughter apparently didn't want was putting her under undue stress. A stress eased by 40-year-old scotch. Charlie dropped onto the booth next to Kinsey and across from her aunt.
Well,
Bernice asked, her eyes so bloodshot Charlie almost felt bad for her. It looks like she's been seeing some polar bear on the side, named Damien Miller.
A bear? Seriously? Bernice demanded. That girl!
Kinsey relaxed back in the booth so that she was sitting at an angle, able to see both of them.
Are you really shocked by this? It's not like my sister makes good life choices. But she did. With Ron. The very rich Ron with wonderful connections.
Kinsey smirked at Charlie.
My mother's all about the love.
Fuck love, Bernice snapped. I'm talking about the financial future of this family, resting on the giant shoulders of a spoiled brat. Kinsey gave her mother a thumbs up. Good job, Ma.
But she loves Ron. I know she does, Bernice insisted. I see it in her eyes.
In her cold, dead eyes, Kinsey muttered, making Charlie snort.
Stop it.
Bernice pressed her fingertips to her temples.
I'm not letting her ruin this. I'm not letting Carrie ruin what could be the love of her life. So I want you and your sisters to stay on her.
We're not PIs, Charlie reminded her. Other than finding out what we've already found out,
I'm not sure what you want us to do.
I want you to keep her out of trouble. Good luck with that.
Bernice slammed her hand on the table and barked at Kenzie. Stop muttering shit under your breath. Look, Charlie cut in, trying to keep the situation calm. We have nothing confirmed yet. Max and Stevie are on her right now anyway. We'll just keep doing that, monitoring the situation.
Thank you.
But there is something else.
About Carrie?
No. Charlie let out a breath. About your father. Bernice frowned, glancing at Carrie.
What about him?
Charlie reached into her messenger bag and pulled out the issue of Vanity Fair. She opened it up to the Wera spread and laid it in front of her aunt. Do you know them? She studied the picture of the twins before admitting,
Yes.
She nodded. They were in an ad for Versace a year or so back.
Is that all you know about them? What else is there to know about two vapid bitches from Italy?
That they're your half-sisters? Bloodshot eyes blinking wide, Bernice leaned forward to get a closer look at the picture. Kenzie did the same.
They could be Badger's ma. Look at those shoulders, like linebackers. Big Italian linebackers.
Bernice shook her head.
He couldn't have. Why are you so surprised?
Kenzie asked her mother. He pretty much started a brand new family over here without actually separating himself from the family he had in Scotland, and Italy is a hell of a lot closer. Bernice raised her hands, palms out.
You know what? I can't deal with this right now, and I'm not sure why I should give a shit. Who knows how many pathetic women the old fucker impregnated in his extremely long life? I don't know how that's my problem.
I didn't say it was your problem, Charlie explained. But these are the two who have been trying to kill me and Max and grab Stevie. These broads are very rich, very determined, and very pissed off at the McKilligans.
No offense, Charlie, but you and your sisters are not exactly considered family.
Ma, Kenzie said, glaring at her mother across the table. It's okay, Charlie told her cousin, appreciating that she was at least attempting to protect Charlie's feelings.
But you should know that it seems they helped Freddy steal the £100 million from Will.
That's when Bernice slammed her head down on the table and then rammed it there a few more times. Charlie cringed a little and mouthed sorry to her cousin. Kenzie shrugged back seconds before her mother's head suddenly jerked up and Bernice growled,
Will there ever be a time when my brother does not find ways to fuck up my life?
Charlie leaned away from that scream and admitted to her aunt, Probably not. Carrie met her 7-foot-tall polar boyfriend on 47th Street, where he led her to one of the many jewelry stores. Stevie watched through the shop window as her cousin fingered a 4-carat diamond set in a simple gold necklace.
Is that a wedding gift?
Stevie asked Max.
You got me.
Once he put the necklace around Carrie's throat, the polar led her through the store. They were arm in arm, and Carrie seemed to enjoy herself as the bear showed her all the sparkly jewels and the entire layout of his store. So they wouldn't be seen, Stevie and Max moved away from the window and stood near a hot dog vendor where they had a clear view of the entrance.
This is so not cool, what she's doing to her poor fiancé.
Not everybody has the same opinion of love, Max said. Maybe they have an arrangement.
The arrangement should be either we're together or we're not together. Not I'll be getting jewelry from other guys before our wedding day together.
Maybe you're a little naive.
Maybe you're an idiot.
Max punched her shoulder, so she punched her back. They had headlocks on each other when the vendor finally pulled them apart.
Stop it, both of you. Love is different for each couple. Now stop it.
They separated, with the vendor pointing a warning finger at both of them before again focusing on his cart. Max leaned close to Stevie and whispered,
We just got schooled by a hot dog vendor.
Stevie whispered back,
Are you saying that because you're putting down the hot dog vendor, or because you really want a hot dog?
She shrugged. I really want a hot dog. And a pretzel.
They left the bar, and Bernice went to the large room where the already arriving gifts for the bride and groom were being stored. She left Charlie and Kenzie out in the hallway while she went inside and began making calls. Charlie sat on the floor, her back against the wall, and waited. She could hear her aunt yelling. There was also some crying, but it was mostly yelling. Such hysterical yelling, Charlie really couldn't understand what was being said. Kenzie sat down next to her. "I'm sorry about all this," she said, shocking Charlie. "You didn't do anything. In fact," Charlie thought a moment, "you have nothing to do with any of this."
"I know, but still."
She raised her knees and rested her elbows on them.
"I might as well warn you now that I doubt any of my aunts and uncles will be much help. They will all be looking to protect themselves."
"I already know that. I just figured I should let Bernice know what was going on since I am taking her money."
"That's not true. You have a loyalty to family, even this family. I'm just sorry we suck at returning it."
"Again, not your fault. You're the only cousin who's actually nice to us."
"Well, if I have a big family wedding, you and your sisters are definitely invited."
"But," she added, laughing a little, "not your dad." That is sound logic for a McKilligan.
"I do try."
The door opened and Bernice came out.
"Well, those bitches are definitely family."
"So Will knew?"
"He knew of them. But they never told us because they just considered the Wera twins another one of our father's unfortunate mistakes."
She gave a little sniff.
"Kind of like me, I guess. Anyway, Freddie probably has no idea who these women are. Although I can only pray that all he did was let himself get led around by the nose rather than what he usually does."
Based on what I read in that article and online, my father wouldn't have a chance with those two. Which is good, because incest is the one thing I would like this family to actively avoid. Bernice looked at the phone she had clutched in her hand.
"There's something else. About my brother's daughter, Mary."
"Which Mary?" Charlie asked. "Mary Pat? Mary Christina? Mary Cecile?"
"No, no. Mary spelled M-A-I-R-I.
"What about her?"
"She was doing hard time in Edinburgh prison, but she's out."
"She was paroled?"
"Escaped, and the family thinks she's headed to the States. They suggested we keep our eyes open. According to Will, she's a little unstable."
"Uncle Will, who set his math teacher on fire when he was 8, thinks that Mary is unstable?" Charlie scratched her neck. "That's disturbing."
"Yeah."
Bernice briefly closed her eyes.
"This just keeps getting fucking worse."
"Ma," Kenzie warned, "your cursing is amping up, and we have to have lunch with Ron's parents today."
"Fuck, I forgot. Fuck, I don't want to meet with those people."
"Ma."
"All right, all right. I need to get ready to meet them."
She pointed at Charlie.
"I've made up my mind. You and your sisters need to get fitted."
Charlie glanced at Kenzie. "Fitted for what?"
"Fitted for your bridesmaid dresses. You won't walk down the aisle, of course, but you'll blend nicely with the wedding party so you can keep an eye on things."
Charlie got to her feet. "I've already hired additional security. There is absolutely no reason for me and my sisters to go to a loveless wedding."
"This isn't about security. This isn't about whether the waiters are serving from the bride. This isn't even about managing any drunks during the dancing portion of the evening. This is about ensuring that nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing, ruins my daughter's day."
"Does that include your own daughter planning to ruin her wedding?"
"I especially mean that."
Charlie shook her head. "Look, I get it. But there's no way I will ever get Max McKilligan into a dress. Not now, not ever." Max spun from one side of the room to the other, letting the skirt of her dark gray dress swirl around her. Standing in front of the mirror, as two tailors tried to get the bridesmaid dresses clearly designed for much smaller honey badgers to fit her, Charlie watched her sister.
I can't believe you're okay with this. Why not? I love going to weddings.
You do?
Absolutely.
She stopped behind Charlie, looking at her in the glass.